going on, Eli?
What's up, man? Vibing there, bro.
I just like the vibe of that song, dude.
Yeah,
it kind of reminds me of like if Derek was a song, it'd be like a cool fucking vibe like that, dude. Those are our boys, man. They're country rappers.
Yeah,
yep, it's something.
I listen to that Colt Ford Lax. I listen to that all the time, bro.
Dude, it's awesome, man. It's awesome. But yeah, speaking of Derek, we got a cool show today. Quickly becoming like a good friend of ours. Definitely the benefits on our side. I'm not sure what he's thinking hanging out with us, but he is. So we've got him muted right now, I hope.
Nope,
so he doesn't.
Nope.
Oh, man. Now the cat's out of the bag.
He's unleashed, man.
Nah, he's a good dude. So, and we've got some fun stuff. And this is a unique show. Obviously, guys, everybody listens, you know, to Day $1.0, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, all that good stuff. Eli pitches at you. Typically with entrepreneurship, it's a lot of just bred entrepreneurs. And I think sometimes I'm not the only one that's not a born entrepreneur, I guess, per se. Like I decided to do just a little bit of pro ball and then, you know, Marine Corps and some government stuff and police stuff. And I didn't hit entrepreneurship until later on. And I kind of pride myself on that, not because I think I'm the shit, but because I think it's important for people to hear that you don't necessarily have to be this born entrepreneur, right? And like you can take and create and just mold a lot of tools along the way from different experiences and still apply them. And it's never too late. But I do think with like the Gary V's out there and, you know, and the Grant Cardones, all super good dudes, but it was all these guys that were just sucky at school and bad at this and bad at that, but then they crush entrepreneurship. And I feel like that's the narrative that gets pushed a lot. So super unique, Eli, this guy. You know, he's going to have a cool story, I'm sure, but I'm going to cliff note it for a bit for all the listeners on the front end. Just, you know, professional football, but now he's a CEO of a hospital. Interesting, right? And there's a lot of entrepreneurship in there, and literally like how he built value and created himself. Somebody created a position for him to go crush because that wasn't like he can go to school to be some CEO of a hospital, right? It's like it's who he is. And the person that supports him, who's also a phenomenal human, mm-hmm. that allow these opportunities. But I'm super intrigued by guys who become a brand and just have a ton of value that could literally go do everything, but they weren't necessarily born kind of like crushing that from the get-go and all that good stuff. But with that being said, I'm going to let him kind of get after it. But Derek Price, what's up, my man?
What's going on, man? How you guys doing?
We're doing good, dude. Was that a good enough intro for you?
Dude. That was a heck of an intro. Like, I might have had some typos when I sent that over to you, but man, you crushed it.
Yeah, dude, I was doing the best I could to like read from Eli has a teleprompter across his face.
Yeah.
And I was just doing the best I could to read that. But no, man, I think it's super intriguing. And I'm guessing, you know, playing professional football, there had to be some level of high school and college academics that go along with that. And you can't just be some guy who was rogue and failing everything and then crush entrepreneurship, right? Like, it definitely had to be good at some other stuff.
Yeah, no. So absolutely, man. Like, you know, people ask me a lot of times, like, how do you get to the NFL and, you know, how do you accomplish those things? Well, first and foremost is just the pursuit of hard work and just constant persistence. But as I've kind of gotten older and I reflect back, like this, like the pursuit of trying to do hard things and accomplish things and kind of forging my own path, man, it goes back until I was like 7 years old. And while it wasn't a lesson that I ever intended, you know, father passed away when I was 7 years old. I was the oldest boy, had two other brothers and a mom that was, you know, trying to hold it all together, being a school teacher on school teacher money, trying to keep us fed and whatnot. And so, I mean, dude, I had my first paper out in the third grade. I was up at 4 a.m. in the third grade. So I guess if you want to talk about entrepreneurship, like that's where that started. I had to forge away. Like, I didn't have money for shoes and I didn't have money for clothes. You know what I'm saying? So tortillas were breakfast. Popping the oven open was keeping the house warm after we cooked breakfast. So yeah, I came up a little, I mean, I'm not going to say I came up too hard because there's people that had it a lot different than I did, but you know, that's kind of my path. And there was no money for college. So I knew early on, like, you know, I don't have money. Nobody had explained finances to me. I didn't have that father figure role model going on. But I saw that somebody will pay for college if I can do sports well. Like, okay, well, I became an entrepreneur, dude, and just developed myself. I think I have some genetic gifts, you know, like you can't coach 6'4". You either are or you're not, you know, that helps. Yep.
6'11", 6'4". Listen, I like to tell people I'm 6'4". So if we're hanging out and you're 6'4", I need you to shut the fuck up like that. And I need you to be 6'11", Derek. Do you understand? Jesus, man, you're making me look bad here.
But no, I mean, like my life growing up was, I knew that you had to have grades. My mom was a school teacher, so, you know, we got too big for her to like physically punish us. So, funny thing was, dude, she was a math teacher. So like early on, like sixth grade, seventh grade, like when I would get in trouble, she'd hand me like a high school geometry book and be like, "You're grounded until you can knock out chapter 5. Oh. And wouldn't explain anything to me about it. You know, nothing. She's just like, however long it takes you to pass the quiz at the end of the chapter is how long you're grounded. So I learned how to like, damn, you know, I got to knock this out. And I have, you know, as soon as the harder I work and study and put focus to it, the less punishment I'm going to eat.
Yeah.
So it's funny, man, how that kind of lesson built up. But yeah, like growing up, I mean, you know, I'm 48, so we didn't have Nintendo and all that kind of stuff. It was two or three channels that you had to get up and change. So mom made an easy rule, like if you're in the house, you're doing work and helping her. If you're out of the house, it's whatever you want. So I go out back and just throw baseballs at a paint spot on a brick wall for hours, bro. Like anything I could do, like if I go inside, I had to vacuum. And I wasn't about that life, you know? So,
yeah. I'm the same way, man. Like I was dribbling a basketball with no hoop because the school was too far away. We couldn't afford a hoop, but I was out there dribbling and, you know, I'm only 6'4", so just, you know, I need to be a little bit taller for the NBA. So I did not choose the NBA, but yeah, man, like I love you talking about your mom, you know, like, both my parents are here but I'm the youngest, I'm the only boy. And, you know, my mom's a 3-time Olympian, did a ton of cool stuff. So I was the only one that kind of gravitated to sports. So my mom and I had a good bond. And to this day, man, she's still my number one fan and puts up with my bullshit. And it's so funny. She'll comment on my Facebook and I still have to like, "Love you too, mom." Like, thanks for the support. Love you too, mom. Man. Like, but it's cool, man. But that's interesting how you talk about your mom, man. And I also enjoy how you talk about some of the, like the hard work and being creative at a young age to just get some of your own things. So even though like it was toward football, like, hey, you didn't have money for cleats, you had to get creative to figure out like how to get some gear, how to kind of set yourself up for a position. And I do like shedding light on that, right? I do like shedding on, hey, let's dive into entrepreneurship and what is that? Like, I think it's a lot of visualization and creativity and being able to see things that others can't and doing it anyway. And then just pursuing
I take a pretty simple approach at a lot of those things. I just reverse engineer it, right? So I knew I wanted to go to college. I knew I didn't have money. So I was like, well, I could be a college athlete. And then, so I started with, well, what does that take? Well, I have to be this fast. I have to be this strong, you know, to fit the normal metrics of somebody that could play at that level. I have to do X, Y, Z. So then I would go backwards and just make sure that I was training to accomplish those things that kind of builds my dossier to make me even eligible to be somebody that's recruitable, you know, get the grades, get the SAT scores. Get my physical performance put together. And then like, as far as recruiting went, like I didn't have anybody help me recruiting. So, I got on and found all of the addresses for every Division I football program in the country. At the time there was 103.
Wow.
And I hand wrote a letter to every recruiting coordinator.
Damn.
And just on me from my address and just mailed it out and said, "Here's who I am. Here's what's going on. And I'd love to be part of your program." And, you know, I backed it up on the field and, you know, obviously I was a blue chip All-American, did a bunch of stuff like that. But if I had done that the world wasn't going to come find me. And that's what I try and tell to a lot of like young athletes. They're like, well, I'm going to go D1. I'm going to play football. I'm going to do X, Y, Z. I'm like, cool. Who have you called? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, they're going to come find me. I'm like, that's not how it works.
No.
Like you got to get on their radar. Like you have to let them know who you are and you got to be persistent and just keep pecking at them, man. And there, you know, there's some confrontation that can go into that because, well, what if they don't respond? Well, what if they say no? All right, cool. You were to know anyway, you know,
correct. So
they didn't know who you were. And the answer was no anyway. Now, at least you're giving yourself a shot. Like, if you know, I'm not hitting a home run if you're not throwing the ball. So you have to get a shot. So
when I think a big piece to that is just taking ownership, right? Like I'm listening to everything. It's like, man, like obviously we're in real estate. I'm like, cool. You're just going to wait for people to come to you, or are you going to find a way to create some outreach and build value to an audience in order to make them like take a look at you and see what you're all about and then make a choice to work with you? And I think it's the same way in anything else, man. Like, and it's super cool that you were doing that at such a young age. And what school did you end up going to?
So I ended up, coming out of high school, it's kind of a long story of how I got there, but coming out of high school, I played football for a team that was just a wishbone run option, and I was a wide receiver. So I only had 4 catches my entire high school career.
Oh, wow.
And but I put my time in track saying, hey, if they're not going to throw me the ball here, well, then I'm going to go run track and try and, you know, better myself or whatever. And I was fortunate. I was all state in the 400 and things like that. But my only offer coming out of high school was junior college. Mm. And so I go to a junior college program and, you know, play the first year. Nothing really happens. The coach after the first year takes a job at another university and tries to recruit me over there. It's kind of a small school out of New Mexico. And I was going to follow him. And, you know, cause he's offering me a full ride, you know, and my mom and everybody's like, man, you got to take it. You get a full ride. This is why you did this. This is why you put in on that time to get that education. But I had the new coach that came in that's like, hey man, stand by. Like with your capabilities and your work ethics, like if you turn those down, like, and you work really hard, I think we can get better offers. So that was probably like my first really big, like adult decision was turning down, leaving a junior college for a 4-year university, thinking if I stay one more year at a junior college, I'll have more opportunity at bigger universities and actually get the dream that I wanted. So I didn't take like the quick, I kind of held out. And it was that second year that you know, my game really exploded. And
so what did you do that second year, like in the off season training wise? How were you keep? Because here's the deal, and it's the same thing in entrepreneurship. It sounds super romantic to not take the short flirt, right? This first deal that's coming your way, it's like, hey, I don't want to take like that first reward. There could be more. True, but you're also playing football, right? And like a season matters. Not getting catches matters. Somebody not blocking correctly or doing something correctly gets your leg blown out if you get hit the wrong way. I mean, there's a lot of risk on top of just the effort and the hard work that you got to put into that second year saying, hey, like, here's what I'm going to do. And I do think, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you get up to better schools, it looks like they run better and they hit better and they know how to hit. Some of the nastiest stuff I've ever seen is like at a high school level or a junior college level where people aren't quite prepared to tackle properly or hit somebody properly. And you see a lot of nasty stuff. So there's risk in staying there. And just like in entrepreneurship, you pass something up and you risk something. It also could mean starting over or something not working out. And then you got to regroup and you have to have like the poise to do that. Right. So, you know, I guess a 2-part question is, where did that poise come from as far as understanding the risk of maybe not getting that opportunity to go to a 4-year if something happens to you, right? And then on top of that, from the physical and the mental standpoint, what were you doing on the side where you could control as far as training and preparation to make sure that second year was blown out of the sky?
That's actually a great question. I don't think I've ever thought about that before until you just posed it. But
that's why I'm here, Derek, because I'm the number one podcast questionnaire on the planet.
Clearly, bro. Good job.
Shout out to Rogan. Joe Rogan. I'm coming at you, bro.
Joe Rogan, baby. So, you know, when I turned it down, you know, I got a lot of grief from the family and from friends like, man, this is what you worked for. It's a 4-year deal. And I had already sold myself that I thought I was capable of something a little bit bigger and better. So I really don't leave a lot of back doors in my life. I kind of burn the boats type of mentality. And I was like, well, I turned it down. And if I get hurt, you know, that's a wrap and I'll figure something else out, but I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to control what I can control. And what I can control right now is bigger, stronger, faster, learn the offense better, hang around in the off season. Don't go out coking and joking with your boys. Don't go out drinking, like bed early, up early, you know what I'm saying? Like putting in the work. And I just, in my heart, I knew I was working harder than other people that were trying to do what I was doing. And I just feel like when you do that, better, like breaks go your way. You know what I mean? Right. Like when I know I'm just outworking you, it gives me like an inherent confidence that what I'm going to do is going to succeed and going to work out. And that doesn't mean it's an overnight thing too. That's not like, well, I worked hard for a week and didn't. Nah, man. Like I stopped my whole life, like focused on grades and just was work, weight room, study, film study, et cetera, everything I could do. And I came back that second year that, you know, they changed the offense up a little bit. I was a much bigger part and, you know, I really got a lot of opportunity. I more or less had any school I could have wanted to go to coming out my second year.
I like that, man. And also something that's intriguing too is instead of following a coach for what he needed at a university, that'd be kind of like following his lead, right? Like, hey, I'm going to go to this 4-year school for what this coach needs. And I'm going to be a part of this coach's story, which isn't bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure he had phenomenal intentions for you, But it sounds like you stepped it up a notch your second year. But the coach that was staying at that JUCO, he wasn't trying to bring you anywhere. He was trying to push you wherever you could go. Not just where he was going to go, but it was like, hey, you've got some talent. If we dial these things in, you can create your own story, go wherever the fuck you want to go, versus you following a coach. And I just wonder if your tenacity and just being able to see the direction on that second year would have been the same if you followed a coach. I wonder if it'd be more of like, all right, coach, thank you for bringing me here. Like, whatever you need from me, I'm here, versus, hey, I'm focused on me now and the work and the effort I need to put into this new path and this direction that's literally limitless. And the support from that coach that you stayed with and him shedding some light, like, I wonder if that fueled some of that direction. And I'm sure we all agree, man, when you've got some direction, you've got something in this, in your sights, every day is accountable. Every day means something to you and it matters. And that's where you really start to get neurotic and productive, you know, with something.
Yeah, no. So the coach, the new coach that came in, that was my second year. And remember, in collegiate eligibility, you've got 5 years to get four in. So to give up another year to junior college and not go to, you know, a university was definitely a risk. But maybe not having had a father figure growing up, like, I had this coach put his arm around me. He's like, hey, I got you. You know, you keep doing what you're doing. You put in this work. I'm telling you, I've been there. I've seen it. I've been around the block. You have the talent to go to the next level. So this wasn't something that I just independently sucked out of my thumb. Like, I'm going to give a tremendous amount of credit to that new coaching staff that called me on there. Like, I mean, did it fit their needs? Yeah. Like, was I a player that was going to help their team win? Of course it was. But you know, there was a very heartfelt conversation where he's like, look, I got you. And you know, sometimes you need somebody to like, to uplift you a little bit, like, you know, help secure that decision. So basically it was, he and I were the only two people basically in my entire sector of the world and my circle of friends and family that thought it was a good idea. Everybody else is like, you're an idiot. You know, why aren't you taking this 4-year school? If you blow your knee out or something, you're never playing again. You lose your dreams, whatever. But yeah, man, he put his arm around me. He's like, let's do this. And you know, by the third game of the season, we had to have my mail sent somewhere else because, you know, the post office wouldn't deliver the hundreds of letters to our house anymore. Good problem to have.
That's awesome.
Right there, man. Like right there, that snippet right there. If anybody ever wonders why athletics in youth sports all the way through collegiate sports, like why athletics matter, or, oh, it's just a stupid game, or cool. But this is exactly why athletics still matter to our youth, man, and just allowing some of those moments to add up between players and coaches and to really create some awesome humans. And I've been hogging the mic, by the way, so much that now I have to pee-pee Derek. So Eli's going to be chatting with you. Eli's a phenomenal football player, believe it or not. He's going to be chatting with you about some of this. I'm going to run and use the potty. And yeah, you like that dad lingo, potty?
Yeah.
Now that I got kids, I got to say potty. So I'm going to go take a quick tinkle, and then Eli will keep covering me, man. And yeah, he's got some great football stories.
I do.
Enjoy some of those, and I'll be right back.
They called me wrong way Eli, man. My one career in flag football. But I want to go back to something you had mentioned earlier, man, when you were talking about goal setting and how you basically reverse engineered what it was that you were trying to do. And something I wanted to point out was just something really cool that you mentioned, because this is something that people fail. And we talk a lot about goal setting, right? That's a common topic. Very rarely, though, do people put the systems and processes needed to accomplish that goal in conjunction with the goal. And I feel like that's what you were talking about right there, when it was like, cool, I have this goal to accomplish, you know, getting a scholarship for football. But then immediately you put in the steps of what you needed to do to get there. Can you talk about that a little bit? And then, you know, is that something that you still do with your goals currently?
Yeah, absolutely. Without like, you know, hogging this thing and making it the Derek Price infomercial, I've actually recently kind of coalesced what got me to where I'm at and put it into what I call the Price method. And it's exactly that. It's basically like how to thrive under pressure using this method, basically how to decision make. And, you know, starts with prioritizing, then reflecting and identifying, you know, and so on. But when it comes to goal setting for me, whether it's swimming the English Channel, doing an Ironman, doing a jiu-jitsu tournament, you know, whatever I'm competing in at that particular point in time, is I go to like, well, who does it the best? Mm-hmm. And then I basically copy their script. What did they do? And then I adopt that into my life and say, okay, well, you know, if I have to, if these guys are accomplishing X, Y, Z, I need to be able to accomplish X, Y, Z.
Yep.
And if I'm not doing that, then what gives me the right to think that I'm somehow going to join that group or somehow be successful in that?
Get the same results. Yeah.
You know, if you guys are in real estate and you're knocking on 100 doors a day and making 100 cold calls a day, and I don't know real estate, but maybe you're doing that because you look to see who the biggest fish are and that's what they're doing. Well, you better do that. And then maybe 150 to 200 calls a day, catch up in that. But you know, what kills me is these kids or these adults, or whatever, that they're like, oh, I want to be, you know, the top real estate guy. I want to be the top doctor. I want to be the top whatever. And I'm like, cool. What are you doing to get there? And they're like, oh, I'm just good.
Yeah.
Like, the world will come find me. And I just don't believe that that happens. You know, like, yeah, lightning strikes, right? Lightning strikes. Mm-hmm. And everybody can point to the one guy who came out and just found the four-leaf clover, and they mm-hmm. think that that's the path. But that's why you know their names. You know what I mean? That's why you can, oh, this guy, and this guy accomplished that. Well, you know hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
But you know two or three names of guys that found four-leaf clovers. The rest of us that became successful are because somebody helped us along the way. Somebody motivated us along the way. You saw your goal very clearly and you built it backwards. Like, okay, if I want to be here, what's the step below that? Okay, I got to accomplish that. What's the step below that? I got to accomplish that. All the way back to wherever you are on that timeline of success. Mm-hmm. And then you basically built your roadmap.
Just, all the way back to like, hey, how about you do a deal and see if you even fucking like this in the first place before you go popping off saying you're going to be the number one realtor on the planet. You know what I mean? Right? Like all the way that far. Like, hey, how about you just figure out, hey, how do I, you know, don't try to fit in. Try to make that industry fit you and in your strengths, right? And still have some individuality. But I get super concerned for people that are so insecure to the point. We see this a lot in real estate because we do have athletes and other people, you know, that come into real estate. And it's so cool. It's cool. I'm just going to say cool. Fuck it. It's really cool to watch people who have dominated sports, like in high school, or they were like an all-state wrestler or whatever, or they're just great at fitness, and they come to real estate, and it's the first hard thing they've ever done. Because what they don't realize is, like, a lot of people are just naturally good at something, right? Sports growing up, or, you know, academics, whatever it may be, but in real estate, most people don't even do a deal for 6 months.
Yeah.
And that's okay. If you do one deal, like if your first year is within the first 6 months of you being in real estate, like, hey, you're not off the path.
Yeah, no.
Like, it's okay, like putting in all that work, but some people cannot stand the thought or the feeling of sucking at something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they crumble. And this is, you know, real estate's one of those entrepreneurial worlds where you see a lot of it because a barrier of entry isn't significantly hard. It's a couple months of a ton of studying and taking proctored tests and all that, but it's not that difficult, and people get into it because they hear the return that you can make financially, but they've never sucked, right? And or just taken a hit and had to get back up. And it's interesting to watch it. And we've had a couple of those encounters through our career, you know, where I literally have told people, like, get out of my office. Stop talking to me. Like, you're not listening to anything anyone's saying, but you're in here literally telling me how you're going to be the number one realtor in Colorado. And it's like, hey, man, who's the number one guy in Colorado right now? Have you called him? Have you asked him how he got there? Like, what? Or is it that's just you popping off at the mouth? And I guess it's a great segue to like visualization and self-talk and things like that, because it's I'm all for it. But when it's so external to everyone else, it's like, hey, even you got to know you're full of shit at some point. Like, hey, let's just put the work in. And I also think it's okay to, like, there's a difference between failing, right, and just not executing, and then choosing to do something else if it's not for you. And that might be too early of a question for Derek, because we haven't got into your professional football side, but I'm sure after post football we'll get into this, so don't answer this quite yet. But I'm super curious if, like, hey, if you tried anything after football that wasn't quite for you, and people being so consumed by like, oh, I can't fail, or it's like, hey, man, it's effort based, but you got to be okay to just have some self-awareness and figure, like, man, this isn't my jam. Like, for example, for me, I was helping an old district manager from 24. They created a gym called Crunch. And he was number two in the company. His brother owned it. And I was getting slotted for some cool stuff. And they were excited to have me around. Hey, cool. And this was after I helped build a fitness company. And I went there for a tad bit. We were crushing sales, Derek. You know me, dude. I run my mouth. We were having fun and crushing sales. once we opened up, I go, ooh, I hate this. Like, I love going to the gym. Mm-hmm. I hate manning a gym with guys that barely get paid enough per hour, and the bathrooms are dirty, and you're, and I'm, man, I'm babysitting. And then by the time I'm done with my shift, I don't want to work out at all. Like, I just want to get the fuck out of there. Like, it just wasn't for me, right? But it wasn't that I was failing with, like, my effort or being proficient at all. It was like, man, just making a decision to move in a different direction and having the confidence to know that I can let go of something and move in a different direction and still be successful. And maybe that's too soon. I don't know. But I would love to kind of get your opinion on that, Derek, as far as, like, why don't you just answer that now, and then we'll kind of review into pro football. But did you ever, you know, once you exited, were there things that you tried that just weren't for you? That may,
absolutely.
I mean, so and another example is police work. I walked away from that. Dude, I make great money as a cop. Right? But it just, I saw my future because I saw what sergeants and detectives and everyone else did. And I'm just like, man, like, I've been running and gunning for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this forever. Right? And I got backlash for that, dude. But hey, so it was like two things. One, I just, something I knew wasn't for me. Hadn't quite made a lot of money in it, the gym thing. And then prior to that, leaving the police world and walking away from that by choice, just knowing it just wasn't for me long term. Have you ever had to do some of those things? And how did you kind of own that? And what did you do to process through that?
Well, the answer to that is, of course. But what you just spoke about was what I call, like, the silver lining. Like you run in the gym, you selling things, you go in police force. Like, there's no failure in that. The success is that you put the time in, you put your heart into it, you put your passion into it, you ran it to the, you know, to the goal line, and you said, I know what this looks like. I know what the next chapter looks like. And this isn't the story that I want my life to read. Cool. That's a win, man. Like,
yeah.
I can tell you in business, the reason that I'm successful in business is because I failed 100 times. Like, for every 10 ideas I come up with, one to maybe two work. And I don't look at those other 8 or 9 as something like, oh man, I failed. I suck. I'm like, cool. I tried this. It didn't work. But now I know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And then I come back and I do it different. I do it stronger. And, you know, Eli had asked me a question while you were in the potty, you know, and we talked about very briefly my price method. Well, the last step in my price method, the acronym PRICE, is evaluate and feel free to pivot, you know? So mm-hmm. There's been plenty of things that I've been running down, and whether it's working out or not working out, when you get down to that last step and you start to evaluate where it's going, mm-hmm. what the outcome is and how things are going, there's been opportunities that may have been financially lucrative to me, but I didn't want to do that because I didn't like where it was going for whatever reason.
Right.
Or it just flat out didn't work. I don't look at that as a failure at all, man. Like, I say, okay, let me evaluate. Cool. I don't want to do that for XYZ reason. Let me reprioritize the deck. Mm-hmm. Let me put something on top that gives me, you know, passion and soul to it. Now let's start over.
Right. So, and I think the elephant in the room, or I think, like, the narrative that's starting to kind of, like, develop over conversation is, you're not relying on an organization or anyone else to kind of, like, pull you through stuff as you pivot and change different, you know, from professions to professions or you know, whatever you may be. Like, you're very reliant on yourself and trusting of yourself that, hey, whatever mm-hmm. endeavor I'm going to attack, I know I'm going to do it to the best of my ability and I'm going to be successful no matter what I do, versus people that do get kind of stuck in corporate America or law enforcement and they don't like it and they don't want the future of it, but they're so handcuffed by a paycheck or consistency or mm-hmm. comfort, and they don't, like, branch away from that. And my first thing to that is, especially after COVID or whatever it may be, like, just because you have a consistent paycheck from a corporation doesn't mean, one, the corporation isn't going to lay you off or fire you, right? Because they can, or they're not going to go under themselves. So you thinking that you have this consistent paycheck that just lives for eternity until your retirement cannot be further from the truth. Believe it or not, I actually felt better relying on myself for income versus a system. But I do know, man, like, a lot of people kind of get stuck in that world where, like, they feel exactly what you're talking about, man, mm-hmm. but they have no idea or support structure to maybe branch off and walk away from the paycheck or the comfort of something that's consistent, for lack of a better word.
And Derek, before we go much further, man, the price method, let me go back to that one more time.
No, you got to pay for that.
Last time.
Oh, you already gave it away for free?
Last time you mentioned it, you mentioned prioritize, reflect. That's all I got. I miss an I and C, buddy.
Initiative.
Oh, so the I is identify. So, and
thank you. Thank you, Derek, for answering that. It's identify.
So I prioritize. So in decision-making, right?
Yeah.
This is global decision-making for me. So when I when I think of something like, do I want to do this, or with any big decision, I prioritize it. Like, how important is this? Like, I mean, I have to decide what I'm gonna eat for lunch today. Yeah. Where does that fall in my life priority versus how am I gonna raise my kids? What's my career? You know, what am I gonna pursue in my spiritual faith? You know, how am I gonna treat my wife? There's a lot of those decisions.
Oh, that's a hard one.
So I prioritize it, and then I just determine, like, you know, with it, every decision there comes a pressure, right? There's pressure. You're under pressure. That's why you have to decide. You have to go right or left. You have to do something. So is this an internal pressure or an external pressure? Who is it serving? What am I getting out of it? Then I sit back and I kind of reflect on my past histories of having made decisions in the same likeness and what were the outcomes. And this is where, like, mentors make a massive difference, right? Because I only have a certain set of experiences that I've ever lived through. This is where I find people that have done what I want to do, and I go talk to them about it. And then that moves into the I, which is the intel or identify. I gather as much information as I can. And I sit there going to the sea, I create my plan with, I've prioritized it. I've reflected on the past histories of it, thought about different outcomes, gathered as much intel as I can. Now I'm going to create this plan and then I'm going to execute it. And then I'm going to sit back and evaluate it. You know, it's like somebody asked me the other day, well, how does that work? Well, imagine, Eli, that you got it, that you're a pilot, right? And I'm a pilot. So you take off from, you know, Colorado and you're going to fly to New York. Well, if you took off and you're like, here's my heading, and then you didn't look at it again for 5 hours, assuming that it's just going to land you in New York, man, if you're off by 1 degree, bro, you're in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, to all the flat earthers out there, if you've ever been in a cockpit with pilots, yeah. Definitely not fucking true, right? Weird.
Not true.
At all.
That's funny.
At all. No, that's good stuff. And I got to know too, right? Like, how did the price method go down when you decided to hang out with me and this knucklehead and dive yourself into that? How did that go?
Yeah. Again, you know, I feel like I have a message. I'm old enough now where I don't create a whole lot of new type of stuff. And I have, like, I personally, and this, it sounds egotistical, but I've been celebrated a lot of times. I've won a lot of awards. I have financially done well. I have athletically done well. I'm married to my high school sweetheart. You know, we're together 30 years. I got 3 kids, you know, things are going well. So, but I owe a lot of my successes, Will and Eli, to other men and women in my life who have come to me and said, hey man, let me help you out. Let me show you a better way. Like Dr. Jeff Glaus gave me my first opportunity when I was a chiropractor. Dan Cirillo gave me my opportunity to come work and be a CEO of a hospital. Carl Hargrave, you know, gave me the opportunity to play for University of Iowa. You know, Chuck Long, the Heisman runner up to Bo Jackson, was the one that called me because I didn't want to play in the NFL. After college, I was ready to move into the business world.
Wow.
So I didn't run for the pros. I didn't go to scout day. Wow. I didn't do anything. And he called me on the phone while sitting at home after I graduated at Christmas. And he's like, listen, man, like, you've got to give this a shot. I'm telling you, you'll regret it your whole life. Reevaluated my process, went back through it and said, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. If it wasn't for that one phone call that he took the time to make, I'm not playing in the NFL because I wouldn't have gone back to Iowa. Worked out for the pros, gone to all the combine stuff, et cetera, and then eventually made it to the Detroit Lions. So I feel like I'm at that phase or chapter in my life now where to get soul satiety, which is what I truly live for now, like what makes my heart feel good, what helps me go to sleep at night where I say, hey, I'm trying to make the world a better place. If I can impact one life, like it's giving back. Like here's what I did. Here's what made me successful. Excuse me. And if I have the opportunity to put my arm around some kid's shoulder, mm-hmm. and say, hey man, you're going down this road. I've been down that road. Like I said, I failed more than anybody in the room. I've been down that road. Here's how it ends. If you course correct over this way, you're going to get to your goal. So that's kind of my life pursuit right now on a lot of different fronts. You know, Dan Cirillo and I and Will, and you guys know we have Spartan 7. We train kids to go to Buds and get pinned. I work with a lot of kids at the high school level to get, you know, college scholarships. My daughter's getting a college scholarship for water polo right now. So I get to mentor her, whether she likes it or not, because I'm bad. But, and then, you know, up and comers in business, they're like, I have 300 employees here. They walk into my office. They're like, hey, how do I get a promotion? What if I want to be the CEO someday? And I'm like, I would love you to be a CEO someday. Here's what I did. What are you doing? Let's merge our stories together. Yeah. You know, and
yeah.
At this point in life, I'm really about what value can I bring to somebody's world or life to where someday when they're doing a podcast, they're like, hey, I talked to this one guy named Derek Price and he put his arm around my shoulder And he told me go right instead of left. And as a result, boom, something great happened. And that makes my heart and soul feel good. And I think when I'm lying on my deathbed, you know, I'm going to go, that's what I'm going to reflect on is, yeah, I left it better than I found it.
100%. Well, and I'm glad you're mentioning a lot of this stuff too, man, because I have a strong opinion of like leadership, right? And right now, like, especially in like the younger community, we have a lot of kids that want to be motivational speakers, that want to be coaches and certain things. And it's like, hey, listen, part of being a quote unquote motivational speaker or a mentor or a leader is you need to be very in tune with understanding, like, you got to go build something. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just be this person that wants to go talk about it. And that's okay, right? And even when you get there, even when you quote unquote have made it, right, you're still going to have to be ever evolving to that next level if you want to have continued leadership and mentorship at a certain level. And you should want that to evolve. You shouldn't want to just stay one place and, hey, I'm just helping these people. Like, you should constantly evolve, because part of leadership is your family, whether you're a wife or a husband or whatever it may be. Like, even if you're not an entrepreneur listening to this, I promise you, at some level, you're a leader. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it comes down to your kiddos. And if you don't have the experience, or you haven't gone through failure or hard times, or just a process, even if it's going awesome, right? Like, we're doing 75 hard right now. It's going awesome. But it's still just, it's just a process, man. Same thing with life and getting through college, like your academics through a 4-year university or 3 years or however long you stay there before you took a shot at the NFL. That still coincided with the bigger picture that led to the NFL. And a lot of people don't think their degree matters. And you know what? A lot of times your degree by itself doesn't fucking matter. However, your ability to commit to something and stay dedicated and proficient for a duration of time teaches you a ton of shit, whether you actually apply your basket weaving degree or not, right? And I think those are important. And, you know, when we first met you, it was so cool because we were out in Idaho doing some Spartan 7 stuff, and you and Dan were like, Eli and I came around the corner, and you guys were just like, hey, what do you guys think of this? Or what do you think it could be? Or, like, you know, what does that look like? And I kind of shot a couple of ideas of like, yeah, hey, here's the great, but I think if we, you know, if it had this and this, it could definitely be a little bit more full circle. And you were like, cool, man. Like, so, hey, are you guys cool if we call you after this? Like, we'd like to maybe work with you guys or just see, hey, let's just see what that looks like. And maybe you saw Eli and I flirting and the energy was good. And you're like, yeah, look at these two cornballs and having fun. But we were there in the first place because of a recommendation from Tosh and hitting top 1% in the world, you know, for Berkshire, and then top 0.5% in the world for Berkshire. And yep, my military career and you know, my friendship and relationship with Tosh led to an invitation to this. So there was a lot of credibility, and then you guys were able to just observe, hey, are these guys assholes, but they're successful, but they're assholes? Like, how do they mingle with people? How do they get along with themselves? How do they kind of carry themselves? And then it led to an opportunity to, you know, to do some cool stuff with you guys. But I just can't express enough that even that one little moment of, hey, what do you guys think? Or, yeah, hey, maybe we should meet up on some Zoom calls and kind of see what this looks like, and maybe there's a spot for you guys to kind of fill a role here. That little opportunity literally has 16 years behind it, you know? And then when that opportunity presents itself, there's still a level of expectation that you and Dan are going to have for Eli and I to be proficient at certain expectations if we're going to have a role to be proficient at some stuff and be a part of it. And I think, like, that's what people miss. They're always looking for this opportunity.
The right? one thing that's going to make
it. The one thing or the opportunity. Yeah. And they haven't done enough, like, soul searching with, like, who you are as a product in the first place before the opportunity happens. And we talk about it in real estate too. Everybody's like so worried about finding a deal. And I tell them, hey, the worst thing you could do is find that deal and not know what you're doing and get fucking people complaining on you or never wanting to recommend business to you because you're so busy trying to find something. You didn't take into account that these are the most expensive buys and sells of people's lives. And if you're not professional and in that advisor role proficiently, you're fucking someone. Mm-hmm. Stop trying to find the deal and just make sure you're prepared. Those things are going to come. And I felt like just that opportunity that we had with you guys, you know, it came from, there was so much prior that even led to that conversation in the first place. And then when we did respond, or, you know, when I came out and saw you guys and we had some good conversations and Eli and I are starting to work on some back end stuff, we had to be prepared to support what came out of our fucking mouth as well. Right. And I just wonder, like, if people are putting enough work into that. And I wonder, like, how much work you put in while you were at school, not only academically, but physically and mentally, just to prepare yourself for the shot at NFL mm-hmm. to even be considered or taken serious? You know, is there something that you, is there any ideas or perspective you have on that?
Well, man, you just rattled off a whole lot of words. So I had a lot of thoughts while you're talking about it. But going back to like when we met you guys at Shaw's, first of all, like recognizes like, you know what I mean? Lions recognize lions. And, you know, I'm a person that's very much, don't talk about it, be about it. You know, mm-hmm. don't tell me what you're going to do. Show me.
Yep.
And so, you know, Dan and I recognized the two of you guys and said, hey, these are some, you know, some power players. They're putting in work. They're putting in effort. You can see it in how somebody carries themselves. You can see it when, you know, I look over and while you guys are guests of the program, you're cleaning up the dinner tables, you're picking up trash, you're picking up brass that nobody asks you to do. You know, and we just say, hey, those are the kind of guys, like they're kind of in our wheelhouse, like recognizes like. So, you know, you're not giving enough credit, but we talked to you guys and said, hey, let's do something. And hell, it was 5 days later, you were on a plane from Colorado flying to Vegas to meet with us for a day, you know? Yeah. So I think that also, you know, one of those points that's very important is everybody gets opportunities. The vast majority of people don't recognize what an opportunity looks like.
Oh,
because
man.
It's not like, oh, look at this opportunity I'm putting in front of you. It's a sentence. It's a word. It's a look. It's a gesture. It's a feeling. Mm. It's a thought. It's an emotion. Mm. And you got to capitalize on it, man. Like, and Eli and Will, you guys capitalized on it immediately. We opened the door. We had a miniature conversation. Boom, you followed it up the day after it was over with a phone call. The next day, you're like, when are you guys going to be in town? The next day, you're like, here's my plane ticket. Right. Boom. So you took what was a tiny little fishing lure that we kind of cast out, and you grabbed onto it, tied it around your waist, and said, let's go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and I think that that's where a lot of success comes from. Like, I had the opportunity to do a speaking engagement for a large group up in Utah recently. And, you know, when they contacted me, we went back and forth, and then they're like, oh, you know, it looks like we got enough speakers, you know, we're good, you know, maybe we'll punt you for the next time, et cetera. So they're like, we don't have a chair for you, you know? So my mentality is like, well, if you don't have a chair, I'm coming, I'm going to bring a lawn chair.
I'll bring a chair. Yeah.
So I was like, hey, well, I booked my ticket and I'm going to be there. And they're like, oh, we don't have a spot for you. I was like, well, I'll be there and I'll be there at this date. And if somebody falls out, I'll be standing by.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just kept with that persistence. And eventually they're like, well, now we've looked into you a little bit more and we kind of like your story. As a matter of fact, we want you to speak. And as a matter of fact, now we want you to keynote speak, you know? So,
and you're like, so fuck, I forgot my speech.
Yeah, exactly right. So it was something very, very small, you know, but, I grab onto things. I don't let it go. I have a tenacity about it. Like, mm-hmm. like, listen, here's the deal, man. You want to know the secret to success is it's hard, bro. It is hard. And it is fraught with peril and there are pitfalls. There's 1,000 reasons why you shouldn't do it. Your subconscious is going to tell you it's not going to work out. Your buddies are going to slam you for it. Your wife's going to give you drama about quitting a paycheck to your point, your corporate job or whatever. And everybody's going to be stressed about because they're thinking about how it may impact them
mm-hmm.
or the fact that their ego doesn't want you to succeed because they didn't do it. And then they feel bad about themselves or whatever. But like when I see a tiny sliver, like let's go to SEAL Fit. Listen, well, you need to broadcast the fact I am not military. I have never served in the military. I am not a Navy SEAL. Sometimes that gets mistaken because of the company I keep. I'm not a military guy. I did go through a SEAL Fit Kokoro program, which is a Hell Week sim. I showed up because it sounded like a hell of a cool challenge. I always wanted to know, like every boy does, like, I wonder how this would work out if I had tried this, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, I ended up getting the honor man out of the class and that was cool. But then I was like, well, what's next? And they're like, well, you got honor man, you can go to Buds now or whatever. And I was like, well, I'm 35. I'm a doctor. I got 3 kids.
Yeah. Well, you know where honor men go from that course.
Where's that?
The Marine Corps, bro. You know that. Dan didn't mention that. Man, I got to talk to that guy.
I had a really cool coach. You guys probably know who I'm talking about. His name was Glenn Doherty. He's one of the SEALs killed in Benghazi.
Mm.
And he again, put his arm around me and said, hey, man, we just really like your spirit and attitude. Why don't you just come back out of the next Kokoro class and just sit in the background and watch it from the coaching sideline? So for 2 years, I flew out there on my dime, unpaid. I'll sweep in the shitter, picking up sand, getting coffee for the guys. And I was just there. They weren't inviting me. There was no role for me, whatever, but I just kept showing up.
Yep.
And eventually they were like, well, since you're here and you kind of know what we do, why don't you run this evolution?
Yep.
And I did that to the best of my ability. And then as time goes on, run this shift and run. And then it basically turned into like run the camp and then ultimately like run the program. Right.
Right.
But none of that started from like, hey, go run the program, Derek. Like, here you go. Go run it. No. It started with like, hey, you did good. And I was like, well, I'm going to come back. And they're like, well, we don't really have anything. I said, well, I'm coming back anyway.
Right.
And I just kept the persistence of doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. Because I knew the end goal. The end goal was I wanted to be a coach. But at that time, all the guys were SEALs or other, you know, SF mm-hmm. guys from different communities. And I was like, well, Bill Belichick didn't play a whole lot of football. He's a pretty damn good coach. So, mm-hmm. you know, I want to be a coach on this sideline too. So I just kept showing up, mouth closed, ears open. Yes, sir. Like, hey, you want coffee at 2 a.m? I'm gonna go get it for you. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna prove out to you that I'm the guy that's not here for self-serving, you know, reasons, but I'm here, a guy that wants to be like a valued member of the team. And over time, you know, it developed into something like that. And I guess that's kind of more or less the vast majority of the businesses that I've opened and run have kind of come from that. It, very, very infrequently does somebody walk up to me and say, here's $1 million deal. I didn't know it was coming. All you have to do is hit the go button, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
and I think it's important too, man.
Word, move on it.
Well, and I think it's important for people to understand, like, oh, wait, that guy's not a SEAL, but he's helping running these pre-SEAL BUDS courses. And, you know, and something that I was super fortunate to have, like, in my high school career, I was in the marching band, I was in symphonic band and all that quote-unquote nerdy shit. I was in theater, but I played sports. I played football and baseball. And when I was in the military, I still had friends outside of the military, you know, and same thing when I was in government and stuff and as a cop, like I've always had friends from other backgrounds and I felt like it always kept me grounded and I never had like this overloaded identity into just one thing that made it so hard for me to transition. Like I was just very cultured with a lot of different stuff. And for youngsters that are going into the military that want to be a SEAL, you know, like I love it, right? But having a guy around who's not, but is still accepted because of his high level of proficiency and ability, it's extremely important for these youngsters to understand it's going to be who you are as a person that gets you through SEAL. It's not going to be you getting fucking baptized at 2 a.m, you get dunked in water and you come out a SEAL. And it's also going to be, you know, that ability of understanding those different dynamics that when you're done with the SEALs, who you are. Are you still just talking about that? You still wearing your high school letterman jacket? Or are you ever evolving? And seeing an example of that, where someone is still super high achieving, super high level human, but not necessarily that. Seeing that from that early on, it's extraordinary to what their success is going to be when they leave the teams, right? Or if they go to BUDS and they fail out or get injured and they don't become a SEAL, like thank God they met Derek Price, because they do understand there is so many more things that you can do with yourself. That's not the end of your life. And if you do make it and you decide to leave the team, that's not the high point. It's ever evolving. And it is so damn important for guys like myself that are going in that do those things to understand who you are as a person and just ever evolving, man. Like, and it's really cool that they've embraced that and allowed you that opportunity, because you could be one of the most important people around to be able to give that insight, yet still be proficient enough to execute some coaching for them.
Yeah, for sure. Well, when you talk about ever evolving, like, I mean, just in the syntax of the word itself, evolving means kind of like going from where you're at and growing into something. Well, you know, like leaving the NFL, right? Like everything was, you know, I mean, imagine every day I went to work, I had 100,000 people on their feet clapping. I had Hank Williams Jr. singing the national anthem.
By the way, great segue. I can't just let that go. You segued in from my comment into that, and now we can talk about football and leaving it. Dude, you should have a podcast. That was phenomenal.
I should run a podcast. Dude. I don't know what to do with my hands.
It was phenomenal. So, talk to us about football, man, and what that was like, and then, like, you're leading to right now, the exit away from it. Yeah. Like, let's dive into that.
So, you know, I have a life goal, right? And that was, hey, I want to play collegiate football. And I wanted to play collegiate football because I didn't have any other means to pay for schooling. And I knew that if I want to be successful in business, of which I didn't know what business was at the time, but I knew that you had to get a degree, right? I just, in my mind, yes, there's the guys that, there's the people in the world that have made billions of dollars. And they're like, I didn't go to college. Well, I'm not that guy, right? Mm-hmm. I took the traditional path. But upon, you know, playing football or whatever and making it into Detroit Lions and playing for those guys, you know, everybody wants my autograph. Everybody, like, I was making more money than I'd ever made, and nobody wanted to charge me anything. You know, like, I'd go out to dinner.
Damn
it. Oh, it's on us. It's on us. Like, I'd rent cars. They're like, it's on us. Limo service, you know, et cetera. 100,000 people every Sunday clapping for you, whatever. And then I break my neck. Oh. And, you know, they put plates and screws in here, and I go into the coach's office in off season, and he's like, hey, check it out. You can sit on the sideline for another year and ride your contract out. Happy to have you. You're a great player. You know, love your camaraderie. You're a very positive entity around here. You can stay injured reserve and just kind of and watch this next season go by. But I will never put you on the field again with that injury. You will never play this game again.
Damn.
Okay, that's hard. He goes, so what do you want to do? And I stood up. You know, it took me about like 2 minutes. And I was like, I shook his hand. I was like, I can't be an entourage guy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to move on, but thank you very much for your opportunity. And then I walked out the door, and I bet you within an hour, my locker was changed out. My gear was gone. That train moved. Was I still friends with those guys? Of course, but they're on a different trajectory, right? Could I have called any of those guys I played with? Of course. But I mean, you know the deal. Like when you leave those tight knit, high speed, low drag communities, they still love you. But you're not playing the same game. You're not.
And they don't have time for you. They don't have time for you, and you don't have time to hang out and keep calling them either. Like it's almost like your time is even more important now, because you like the clock's ticking on the next thing. And man, and I don't mean to get you too vulnerable here. Talk to me about when that set in. Like, did you have a cry in the car? Did you have a cry at home? Did you have a cry in the shower? Like, when is like, did you ever have a moment where you had to like, man, I feel it and fuck, but I got it, man. Just all right. Embrace it, feel it, cry it out, and like, let's fucking push forward. Because I do love that you ripped the Band-Aid. Like, you knew before you let it sink in. It's almost like a breakup. When you know something's just not right, you got to move on. It's everyone else that decides not to, and then you're just abusive to each other for 2 years, and then it becomes your identity, and you don't know how to leave. You knew when your brain was still coherent, before the emotions didn't quite hit you yet, you knew, man, I'm not an entourage guy. This seems to be the decision. When did it become hard? And did you have a moment of like just crying it out, or like what was that like, man?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my wife will tell you I'm not a big crier, but
come on.
You know, I had just gotten married too, right?
Oh, man.
So now I'm more or less responsible for another human being, and she married a football player. She left what she was doing. She married an NFL football player, and we get married in June. We go back to the OTA and they're like, you'll never play this game again. So it was like,
wow,
literally a month later, they're like, hey, you don't get to do this job anymore. Wow. Right. But you know, Heather has been my rock from the beginning. And you know, the most blessed things ever happened to me is that I married, you know, my high school sweetheart, my best friend, you know, Heather. And so it was a very quick conversation with her, and she's always had my back and always had confidence. And I would say a lot of the decisions I've made, are like, I'll come up with the idea and she'll be like, oh, so you want to quit your $1 million a year practice to go be a carny because you say you'll be successful, you know, and I'm making that up.
Yeah.
She's like, I believe in you. Let's go.
Yep.
I'm on board. Let's go.
Carny, you know, huh? Carny, Nebraska.
Like Carnival carny.
Oh, I thought you were talking about University of Nebraska. Carny. I'm like, ah, we beat the shit out of those guys. We played those guys.
But she's always had, you know, my back, and I always had her on my team to kind of say, hey, like, look, I could have stayed with the NFL and traveled around for another year and, you know, been in that limelight, so to speak. But I knew that that was a dead end. So I could see the end of that road.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I know this road comes to an end, and I don't want to be there when it ends. What's the point? So I'm just delaying the inevitable. So I go, okay, we're done. Boom. We go back to Arizona. We leave Detroit. I'm hanging out in Arizona. And actually the spine surgeon that rebuilt my neck was like, hey man, if you'd been going to a chiropractor, the guy probably could have helped you out. You'd still be playing. You had these problems, whatever, and you didn't fix them. And now it's broken, whatever. So I go meet this guy named Jeff Glaus. He's a chiropractor. Cool dude. I hang out with him for like 3 weeks. And he's like, why don't you go be a chiropractor? You're a smart kid. Mm. I went like this. Yeah, that's a great idea. So within a month of leaving the NFL, I decided I wanted that career. I reverse engineered it back and told my wife, hey, we're moving back to Iowa.
Oh,
so
my God.
You know, I'd already got my undergrad, but I needed like some more pre-med type courses.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And she's like, yeah, let's do it. So we rented, you know, this is all like pre-internet, right?
Yeah.
So we just basically like picked up the phone and and rented an apartment sight unseen. And she moved with me, and I knocked out those courses and then moved down to Atlanta to go to 4 years more school down there. And, opened up my first clinic, and, you know, successes began to happen from there. But again, somebody came into my life and said, "Hey, here's a good route for you." And I was like, I'd listen. I take my ego out of the way. And I said, okay, it is a good route. And it is, you know, it's kind of like health and wellness and developing people. And I get to do the things I like to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to deal with diarrhea and vomit or abscess teeth and stuff like that. Cool. I'm in, man. Like, so I did that. I graduated cum laude and developed a bunch of clubs along the way and came out and you know, had a good 15-year run opening up clinics and doing pretty well now. But
15.
Every time that I give something else up to move into a different direction, my wife has always been the one that's like, "Hey, do you really think that this is what you want to do? Yeah. And you really think you'll be successful at it? Yeah." She's like, then stop that paycheck. We'll go to zero and we'll start from zero and let's go. You know,
right. And I think that, an important piece, not to cut you off, I think an important piece here too, like if when people believe in you, there's a reason, mm-hmm. there's a responsibility behind everything that you're doing that gives people the mm-hmm. reason to support you. And for all the young entrepreneurs out there, you know, if you do have people that kind of doubt you or aren't quite in your corner or don't quite see it yet, and you haven't quite done anything yet to maybe earn some of that, like, hey, that's okay too. You don't have to be in spite of them, but you just also have to understand, like, you've got to earn the respect for some, either a significant other or parents. Like, you got to earn the respect of having the work ethic and commitment to a vision, ability to pivot if needed, to command someone to just be on a point and on a level with you, that's where, like, support. They're ride or die. Yeah. If you have a conversation, it's articulated and they're in, like, I want to express the weight that becomes behind that. And a second thing too, man, is we're talking a lot about, like, the opportunities that were kind of in front of you that you jumped at that have been phenomenal for you. Has there ever been anything you said no to, and why? As far as opportunities, or where it was anybody like chasing you after the NFL and like the get rich quick schemes, or was there just something just not for you? Like, or I mean,
yeah.
Or what about when you're in chiropractor, like when you're going through school to be a chiropractor? I'm guessing at that point it's like, hey, I kind of have to say no to a lot because I'm back in rebuilding myself mode, and any distraction outside of me going to school is just an opportunity that could be cool. But if I keep chasing other opportunities and I don't take time to develop this right here, this opportunity never happens. Does that maybe speak more true?
That is absolutely true. And, you know, my wife would tell you, and I would agree with her at this point in my life, that I get a little OCD about what I want to accomplish. And, that means that I will like cut all the extraneous stuff. I'll cut everything out that doesn't directly, you know, fall in line with that pursuit of what I'm trying to accomplish. Even if it's things that I enjoy doing or whatever, like, hey, I like sleeping in. Okay, well, guess what? If you're going to run an Ironman, you don't get to do that anymore. So, you know, that's out. So I throw that out and I say, this is what I'm going to do. So,
or it's like swim the Gulf or something, whatever crazy shit you did. We're going to get to that too, buddy.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, with that, it was always that if there was something I wanted to do, I really would go through, like, you know, now I have an acronym for it, the PRICE method, but I think about it, I reflect on it, I ask other people, grab information. And when I make a commitment to doing something, I really, as a personal ethos, hold that in my heart. So a very simple one is, if I tell myself, hey, I'm going to work out tomorrow morning, then there's nothing that's going to get in the way of that. Even if, like, Will, you and Eli come into town, we stay up until 3 a.m., right? If I said I'm going to work out in the morning, I'm still getting up at 4:30 and I'm going to go. Right. Is it going to suck? Yeah, it's going to suck, right? But I'm never going to let that inner bitch dominate me and take the easy road. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you say yes to that once, the second time's easier.
Yep.
It's right. Like quitting things. Like, if you're somebody that's never quit anything, quitting is very hard. And that is a blessing. But once you quit, you're like, oh, that was easy. It's really easy to start doing that. Mm-hmm. So I try, you know, listen, I'm not infallible. But I try to never let that become an opportunity. Like, I just don't quit things.
Right.
Because I don't want that to be a habit that my body would ever think was acceptable or okay.
Well, and on the
flip, I failed a lot of things, but I don't quit them.
On the flip side of that, man, when you have that sort of mentality, that probably makes you very careful about what you also say yes to and what you tell yourself you're going to do. Because if you know that you're stuck after you make a decision, man, you're going to think twice about actually committing to something, right?
Yeah, the power of saying no, Eli, is exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. And, you know, oftentimes when you're pulled and prodded and pushed, like, you get to a certain level in life where people want a part of you for whatever reason, sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Yeah.
But the power to say no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is confrontational. It's difficult sometimes, but if it's not in line with your vision and your goal or directly helping somebody out in life who needs it, like you gotta be comfortable with the no. Like, mm-hmm. Hey man, you want to go to lunch today? No, man. I thank you for the offer. I can't, because in my mind, I'm like, I'm trying to write a business plan for rebuilding the right. city of Birmingham, you know,
right.
or something
right,
like that.
Right.
Like,
right. Now before we get off it too much, man, I want to ask a little more about your marriage. I imagine having a successful marriage like that is not by accident, right? 30 years, man, that's no joke. Having a wife like that that can support you, I'm sure that's not just accidental, right? I mean, I'm sure she's a four-leaf clover, man, but I'm sure some work went into that as well. So what are some things that you guys do, you know, throughout your marriage that helps nurture that and keep you guys where you're at today?
You know, communication, and I know it sounds cliche, but we are each other's best friends. I have guys I like to hang out with. She has girls she likes to hang out with. Mm-hmm. But first and foremost, it's always like the 1-2 punch, me and Heather. And if somebody else can factor in or fit in, that's cool. And that's another thing where sometimes I say no to different, you know, opportunities, ventures, boys trips, nights out, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, my kids laugh, but I'm glad that they see it. Like I'll wake up in the morning, my wife and I do breakfast together. We go to the gym together. She helps me get ready for work. I get out the door. And this is no joke, man. I'm totally serious about this. I will kiss her goodbye, get in my car. As I'm driving down the street, I call her. It's almost like we started another section of conversation. And my kids are like, Dad, are you serious? You just left. Like, you just left. But, you know, constant communication. We're always, I'm talking to her 4 or 5 times a day during the business day, even if that's just a text, a heart emoji, something.
And you guys aren't in business together. This is just genuine husband to wife communication. I miss you. Hey, this is what's going on with my day. That sort of thing, right?
It's funny you say that. Like, I would change that sentence to, we are in business together. We're in business together in that, you know, my role in our business is I go out and I breadwin. And her role in the business is that she makes sure that the house runs, that the kids are, you know, on point with their homework, et cetera. Now, that's not in a misogynistic or a sexist way, and that's not women belong in the kitchen. That's none of those comments. I believe, you know, women are powerful. I have all daughters. I want to see nothing but great successes and power for them. But in our relationship, that's what works the best.
Yeah.
That's what she grew up and she wanted to do that. She wanted to be a housewife and she wanted to be somebody that really took care of the homestead. And I wanted to be somebody that was out there like, with people behind me, my wife and my kids, saying like, go forth and make it as successful as we can so we can live our best lives. And and as a result, you know, like, big things to us are like, on Sunday, you know, all the kids are home, nobody's hanging out with anybody, and we're playing board games, we're watching Netflix movies, and we're just sitting around the table on big meals, just hanging out. We don't invite other people over. We don't have boyfriends, we don't have friends, we don't have cousins, aunts, uncles.
Boyfriends.
Yeah, bro.
Dude, I got a 10-year-old daughter. You
podcast to go south, bring up boyfriend.
Dude, you just literally gave me an instant fucking root canal when you said that. But we don't say that word on that. We say everything but that word. That's but too funny. Man, what off note? Side note. I'm gonna need a lot of your big brother help with that, because I got a 10-year-old and we're not even close to. Hopefully, we're not even close to that, but. What a man. I am glad you said that, because alongside of like business and the relationships, and this is something that Eli and I have always been pretty keen on, man, is just not the just the business things that we can do with people, but putting ourselves around the right type of people and just feeling the benefit of like, yeah, if I need to call Derek for a daughter thing, right? If I need to call anybody for a daughter thing, I'm probably calling the dude with 3 daughters that I just super respect in business. Mm-hmm. And hey, I'm watching him navigate a marriage and being a father, along with being a businessman, and he's doing extraordinary at it. Like, hey, I bet, and he's further along the road than me, right? Like, I bet he's got some great advice for whatever bullshit I think is bullshit that I'm dealing with, right?
So, you know, I'll give you some advice that's worked for me. I'm not saying that I'm gonna write a book on it or anything like that, but simple things, you know, like, I want my kids to see how I act with my wife. So they're ever present in our life. You know, we don't do a whole lot of like just me and my wife getaways, me and my wife vacations. I've taken my kids all over the world. You know, they travel with us. Well, we go to the movies together. And one thing that since day one, and my wife would attest to this if you had her on her own podcast, I open her door, I open her car door, I open her door everywhere we go. Mm-hmm. So that has become like my kids' expectation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I started to meet their boyfriends or their, you know, whatever, I don't even like the word, but you know what I'm talking about, these other boys that want to hang out with them, I would meet the kids and I'd be like, hey, listen, here's the deal, man. If I ever see you not open the door for my daughter, like that's a wrap for me and you. Mm-hmm. She might want to keep you around, but me and you are done.
Right.
And am I intimidating? Nah, probably am a little bit. You know, a couple of times where I've come back, you know, I roll jujitsu quite a bit. I'll come back with a black eye, broken nose, or busted up, whatever. And I come walking with no shirt on. I'm like, who's this? And they're like,
oh, man.
You know? That's, poor day, maybe that's why I lift weights every day. You know, I got to stay in shape. But, you know, the end product is this, Will. Like, my daughter, Kylie, she knew exactly what she wanted to do when she was a freshman in high school. She wanted to be a fireman or military. So she started, she donated thousands of hours during her high school career. She got her EMT license before she was even 18 and had to wait for her 18th birthday for them to issue her her license.
Wow.
She had volunteered at all these different fireplaces. So when she turned 18, she was hired. At like 5,000 people applied. They picked seven. She was one of them. And she's in the academy right now and crushing it. But the youngest firefighter female in the state of Arizona ever hired. Like that's daughter crazy. One. Daughter two is, you know, is a scholastic phenom. She's getting water polo scholarships right now. We're picking and choosing. We're going through that recruiting cycle. But in her essays, what she writes about who she is she's put a lot of time into music. So she teaches special needs kids for free, no money, anything like that, how to play instruments. Mm-hmm. That fills her soul because she's seen, I think she's seen me and my wife do so many charity type events and put on these different, you know, I owned a bunch of CrossFit gyms and I've done a lot of things for charity. Excuse me. Oh, my kids are always there.
Yep.
So they're going to do what they see. Right. And they're like, oh, mom and dad, they're always helping, you know, wounded warriors. They're always helping transition athletes. They're helping, you know, mentally challenged human beings, special needs people. I did a big event, with a bunch of people who had, like cerebral palsy. And I got a bunch of SEALs together and we swam them on a triathlon and then ran them in their running, wheelchairs.
Oh, cool.
And the looks on the parents' faces, my kids were there to see that.
Yeah.
And they were like, that makes my soul feel like I'm doing like God's work here on earth.
Sure.
So they are pushing that path, you know? So as they know that if a boy doesn't walk up to the door and knock and come say hi to mom and dad first, that's a wrap for us.
Yeah, right.
But if our door doesn't get open, that's a wrap. You're texting them after 11 o'clock at night, that's a wrap, you know? But that's not because I told them that's the rule. They just grew up watching that happen.
Yeah, right.
So that's what their preconceived idea of in a life partner is somebody that respects me as a powerful woman would do this and this and this for and with me.
Right.
And that's, so I would say like my greatest contribution thus far on this planet hopefully has been to raise your three kids because what is more important than that? Like you can make all the money in the world. Hell, y'all make more money than you'll ever spend. You'll never get to the bottoms of your bank accounts, but you keep adding to it.
We've been to the bottom a couple times. We've seen the bottom of those bank accounts a couple times, but I know what you mean. And how do you guys handle conflict, right? Like I'm sure you haven't been your wife's favorite person sometimes. I'm sure vice versa. I'm sure my wife, this is why I stay heavy and built, because my wife's Asian and 115 pounds. She can't throw me through the window like she'd like to. So that's why I got to stay like a little diesel. It's actually preventative for me. How do you guys, ever take that to the side and just handle it? Or, I mean, how does that work in a family?
You know, and I'm not saying it's the right way to do it, but, if she doesn't like what I'm saying, doing, acting or whatever, she's going to talk about it right there. And hell be damned on like who's around. It shouldn't care.
Yeah.
Like if I'm acting out of line, if I disrespect, which I do because I'm a knuckle dragger and sometimes I'm not thinking, you know, like it is what it is. We don't wait. It doesn't build up for days or weeks or months. It's like right there. She's going to call me on it. Mm-hmm. But then at the same token right there, I'll call her on something too. If she is going too far down one road or whatever, like people say, hey, don't argue in front of your kids. Well, our kids see us argue, but our arguments are like 10 seconds long and then squash, done, wiped, move on.
And that has to be the most important part, right? Is like your ability to like call each other out, or hey, you just, or maybe not even calling out, but just like, hey, let me bring to your attention that I don't care for how you're approaching something or whatever it is, but then everyone's ability to just like leave it be and move on. Right. And I'm not going to treat you different for the rest of the day. I'm not going to drag you through this guilt thing for a week or whatever it may be. Like, hey, we have to have that ability to like speak our piece, agree to disagree, or just be enlightened by the other person and be sympathetic to it. Cool. And then, hey, but we've got to move on and we have to get back to treating each other appropriately now that we have moved on. Or I think a lot of that stuff, like, you're just not going to be proficient at it, correct?
Yeah. And I think to Eli's point, he asked me like, what was kind of the secret? And I think I said, you know, communication. We talk, you know, 10 times a day, even though we're waking up and sleeping in the same bed at night. When you're communicating that much, you don't allow for time and emotion and feelings to build, right? Because as soon as it starts, you're already talking about it. And because you talk so damn much, like, you have to find new shit to talk about. So she'll bring up like, hey, this is bugging me. Boom. We'll knock it out. You know, some things take a little bit longer to work out than others, obviously.
Right.
But it's not something that, well, we didn't really communicate this week. I was doing my thing, she did her thing. And a week goes by, because there's nothing more powerful than the human mind. And if you get an idea about something or a feeling about something, you're going to self-create a narrative that fits how you want it to fit.
For example,
whether it's accurate or not.
For example, you talk to your wife this much every day, yet sometimes you don't respond to my text message for 2 days. So I'm already building a narrative of like, why the fuck does Derek want to wait 2 days for my text? Oh, good. Maybe I don't text and call enough. You know what I mean?
Well, like, Eli, that's the power of saying no.
Yeah, right? That's hilarious. I was going to say, that's the first P, prioritize right there.
I get it. Yeah.
P, prioritize. yeah, not true. Well, I apologize for that. But it's just very honest, you know, no holds barred communication. Like, we don't have guarded conversations. Mm-hmm. We don't use safe words. Like, if she feels a way or I feel a way, we just talk about it, man.
Yeah.
And if my kids feel a way, like, I do what's called love and logic with my kids. Like, I don't yell at them. I don't spank them. I don't ground them. I don't hit them. I just very simply put, like, hey guys, if you talk back to your mother, I am going to pick you up and put you in the pool, regardless of what you're wearing or what is in your pocket. And if your iPhone's in there, cool. You could do some jobs around the house and maybe earn another one. But this is just what's going to happen. And it's your choice. Like, if you don't want to clean your room, that's okay. You don't get to use the car and you don't get allowance. I don't care which choice you make, you know, clean your room and you get an allowance, you get the car, you get all the favors that go along with that. If you don't, here's the, you pick and choose. So we don't use like a threatening, you need to go to, hey, listen, you want dirty clothes to wear to school? Wear dirty clothes to school.
Yeah. Right.
That affect me, bro. And as a result, like, they don't have that thing where they're like, well, this is going to piss my dad off. I'm going to get him or something like
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
Because I'm like, you don't got a phone. Like, one time they were fighting in the back of the car over like playing one of those little Nintendo games on whose turn it was. I said, hey, listen, y'all handle it or I handle it. And they kept fighting about it. So let me see it. My wife still talks about this day. It was like one of those little $300 things. We're driving to California. I got it. Rolled the window down.
Bye-bye.
Threw it. Rolled the window up.
Dude. It's probably the best $300 you ever spent.
Oh, man.
Everybody in the car was like, what did you just do? And I'm like,
yeah.
Solving problems.
So, yeah. And now when I say things like, hey, you guys figure it out or I will, they're like, we got you, Dad.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
But, but there's just, it's just good for them to have some accountability and understand like the effects of their decision-making or lack thereof. And I also think at some point, like, they get old enough to the point where if you spank them to where it's effective, you're beating the shit out of them, right? Like, my daughter,
they're water polo rodeo kids, man. What are you going to do?
Yeah, like, my daughter's 10, dude. Yeah, like, if I spank her, like, it's not going to do much. And if it did, it's too hard, right? You're just putting a beating on someone, and that's not okay. But, yeah, like, taking her stuff, sometimes it just makes my day. Like, it tickles me to, like, just watch someone be accountable. I'm like, man, I'm glad you're learning that. And I want to kind of get back to some of the narrative here, too. Of, you know, we've heard a couple of like day one dollar zeros here of like starting over and moving back and going to school, you know, and getting through chiropractor school and all that good stuff. And some of those transitions and starting over, like, we've heard, you know, some of the difficulty, but staying focused and putting effort into it. Now, you know, as far as where you're at now, right, with your career, let's shed some light on that and kind of tell everybody what you're doing and then what you're forecasting, what you're looking forward to doing in the future, and then how you're still approaching every day like it's day one dollar zero, like you're still that dog in the fight of in Iowa or back in Arizona and starting over in an apartment? Like, how does that mentality, how do you, because I think we all get complacent to a point, right? I think sometimes, not that we get soft, but you get successful and sometimes you just have to find ways to remind yourself to still remember like what got you there in the first place, how you're still a dog in that fight. And so what do you do to keep that relevant in your world today? And then obviously, literally, what are you doing with your career right now? And then what are you looking forward to in the future?
Yeah. So, an analogy would be, you know, like if you have a favorite knife that you like and you expect it to cut, you got to, you know, keep that blade oiled and sharpened, right? So, if you just took a sharp knife out and you cut with it, you never took care of it or sharpened it, it's going to get dull and it's not going to do the same job. It's just going to kind of be ho-drum, whatever. So basically with me is, intellectually, when I feel like I've accomplished something and I don't feel like there's more accomplishment or more I can do with that, to make some people say to my own detriment or whatever, I kind of like say, okay, well, I'm going to go this way now because this is scary and it's unknown. And I think that that's what I personally use to keep me sharp. So I'm the CEO here at Desert Hope, which is an affiliate of AAC, American Addiction Centers. And you know, we're hitting on all cylinders, we're saving lives every day. And that makes me feel good in my heart. Put together the teams that I need. You know, I had to come in and clear house and bring true leaders in and then really empower them and teach them, you know, hey, this is where you are. But if you guys want my job, here's what you have to do. And this is one thing that a lot of leaders or a lot of CEOs don't do is I'm teaching them how to take my job from me, right? Because if my number two can't fill my role, then I'm handcuffed to being the number one here all the time. Mm-hmm. So while that may seem intimidating, like, why would you tell people the secrets of how you do it? You know, aren't you worried you're going to get replaced? No, I'm not worried I'm going to get replaced because invariably someday it's going to happen. And if I can do it on my terms, I'll have a better outcome. So to your point, Will, is like, what are the things I'm doing? Well, that CEO role that I'm serving in right now eats up a large bandwidth, and rightfully so, because we're talking about saving lives and substance abuse and mental health and mm-hmm. we're a large VA program, and we get people in that, you know, they're ready to die or they're going to die with drugs and we're saving them. But on top of that, like, I'm also working with I can't say his name yet, but some high level NFL athletes that are rebuilding some inner cities, and we're putting together the plans and projects to do medical malls in areas that are underserved.
Oh, cool.
Areas that just don't have good doctors. They just don't have good healthcare. Like, you know, I'm not too concerned about how much money am I going to make on this, but it makes me feel good in my heart to give healthcare to those people that don't have it. Right. And I'm not talking about handouts. I'm just saying, you know, I had access to good doctors, and in some of these inner cities like Birmingham, stuff like that, they may not have it, you know?
Right.
The city, I mean, heck, if you guys want real estate, go look in Birmingham right now. You're going to pick up like 3-acre lots for like $5,000. So
crazy.
You're going to pay you to take them. Yeah.
They pay you to take them. And there's a reason for that, because that's the value of it. So I like to do that. I like to do the Spartan 7 stuff, which is ever evolving. You know, Spartan 7, which you guys alluded to earlier, started with, you know, Dan Cirillo and myself always wanted to hang out. He was living in Seattle. And I'm like, Dan, come down, hang out for the weekend. And I was like, I'll get some guys and we'll go out, we'll go shoot, and and they'll pay us a couple $100 and that'll buy your plane ticket or whatever. Well, we started doing that and we started seeing like, well, people really like this, you know, and they're having a good time. And that's developed into what you guys recently experienced, you know, at that last package we were at. And it's just continuing to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So I like to do that. I like to always have something on the radar as far as, you know, sports go, because I came up through sports. So, you know, I've done 50 triathlons. I've done Ironman multiple times. I've competed in about everything you can think of, from volleyball tournaments to, you know, jujitsu tournament or whatever, you know, and obviously the football stuff. But I always like to keep something. I like to have something I'm aiming towards, because it gives me a stronger sense of why, you know, a purpose. And without a purpose, it's all BS to begin with. Right.
Right.
So what I got to where doing events for myself wasn't enough of a purpose. So that's when I got into doing charity events. Like, you know, a year back, we went and swam the English Channel and we raised $250,000 for a respite house for Navy SEAL Foundation, right? That got me out of bed to drive my ass to the lake in the winter and put in 5 to 6 to 8 to 10 mile swims. If I was just doing this for a medal for me, there's not enough why for that anymore. There's not enough purpose for that anymore.
Right.
a lot of the different, you know, a great story that I really love, what got me into it originally was, and I'll breeze through it as fast as possible, but I had a patient who was a mother, and her husband is a professional hunter. So he's, you know, 265 days a year, he's under the stars guiding different hunts around the country. And she was a patient of mine, and she just was never getting better. She's always looked tired, just beat down, whatever. And one day we had this heart to heart, and she's like, "Hey, listen, I got two twin children. One of them has, you know, really bad diabetes along with a host of other like comorbidities and really, really bad health. And basically I have to get up every 2 hours per night to make sure that she's not going into a coma. So I'm working 40 hours a week to get her insurance, to pay the bills, to pay the medical bills. I go home and I'm waking up every 2 hours and walking into her room to make sure that she basically didn't die in her sleep." Right. That hit me in the heart, bro. Wow. Like, you think you have it rough? There's some people that have like actual rough in life. And I was like, "Well, why don't you just get a glucose monitor or something like that?" "Well, oh, she's been pinpricked so many times that her skin is basically so scar tissue, we can't keep needles in her." I'm like, Okay, that's problems. So then we did a little research and found out, well, why don't we get a glucose dog, these dogs that can smell, blood sugar levels, which is amazing, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Yeah, like insurance won't pay for it, and they're $25,000. So this is one of those like instantaneous things, Willie, you're talking about. I go, "Go find the dog that you want. We're going to make it happen." Yeah. At the time, I owned a bunch of CrossFit gyms and I was in practice. So I go back to my CrossFit gyms. And I go, "We're going to run a charity event and we're going to run as many of these events as we have to until we make enough money to buy that dog." And then I just went out and hustled and got a lot of donations from a lot of like just angel donors, and people showed up at the event. And this event actually went for a couple of years, and we were able to help quite a few people. But we were able to get the money, and to this day, she still has that dog, man. So
that's cool,
now the mom
man.
Can sleep at night,
The kid
has the dog. And that was truly where I was like, that brings me joy. That's my passion, is I like to do things that are hard. So it fits that metric, and it helps people. It fits that metric. That's what I want to go do.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal, man. And if anybody has any kids and you understand like how much you just want your kids to be okay, and then you've also experienced sleep deprivation and how hard it is. Like, those two things stacked on top of each other is heartbreaking, man. Holy cow.
I mean, a man with good health wants everything.
Yeah.
A man without his health wants one thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. And that's a phenomenal story. And definitely, man, like when you talk about giving back to others and creating opportunities, definitely keeps you as like that dog in a fight, because man, like, not only are you accountable and people are looking forward to how you can help them, but you're helping in ways that actually matter. You know what I mean? Like, that's huge, man. And you know, speaking on that, I'll segue, and I'm sure you got a huge day, so I'm trying not to keep you too long, but we've got done what you're doing now. Is there anything that you're looking forward to? I know you spoke about some of the medical stuff where things are needed, but is there anything on the horizon you can kind of speak about a little bit as far as what you're looking forward to?
Yeah. So the next chapter for me in an area I haven't tackled yet is I want to be an author, right? So I'm putting together a lot of my, thoughts, feelings, emotions on a lot of stuff that we talked about on this podcast. And basically for the purpose of, you know, how can I pass this on to somebody? And if they read this book or hit my website or read one of my interviews or articles, whatever, like it may make that 1% change for them. And, you know, I could come out here and say, I want to change a million lives. Well, who doesn't, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is, I'd like a million people to see it and one person to take it on board, and it changes that person's life. I mean, you know, I've been fortunate enough to have experiences where I've treated a guy that had chronic headaches for 10 years, and we were able, fortunately, to get his headaches go away. I didn't see him again, but I ran into a grocery store about a year ago, and he starts crying. I'm like, "What's going on?" He's like, "You need to know that when my headaches went away, I stopped beating my wife and my children." So I go,
damn.
I impacted that man's life. I impacted that family's life. I impacted the legacy of what happens in that world.
Yeah.
And so like those little things, like I'm looking to hit singles, man. Like I think when it comes to success, a lot of people are thinking, what's the home run? What's the grand slam? Well, the reality is it's singles. Like you want to be the highest real estate guy in Colorado, sell 1,000 houses. Don't try and sell the $1 billion house once.
Manufacture, you know what I mean? Runs, man. Small ball. Just being able to manufacture and string together wins.
Irrelevant. Pop, pop, pop. Just keep going. Pop, pop, pop. Just keep hitting.
Yeah. And I think it's also, man, like, you know, with a lot of the stories that you're sharing about everybody, you know, or some of the stories you've had in effect. And I think it's just also like flip side of that coin is just something that a lot of people should recognize is before you point fingers or before you feel bad for yourself or victimize yourself or have a behavior like outward, just understand everyone has their shit. Everyone's got something going on, and who knows like how bad that's going to be, you know, and just like you get a dirty look at the gym or somebody like just, you know, whatever, like, hey, just understand like that might, maybe it is at you, but it might not have much to do with you as you might think, or even as that person might think, or somebody angry in traffic or whatever it may be. Just take that split second to just be a little bit more forgiving, not because you just need to be forgiving to everybody, but just understand like there's just so many things that people are dealing with or trying to process through. You might have just been a punching bag for a second. And if you allow a little bit of a barrier to just understand it's probably not you, like it just allows you to stay your course and be productive and have a win for the day and continue to start stringing together your wins and not allowing a lot of that negative energy to affect you. And before you know it, derail you. And now you're a person that's looking and behaving at people in a certain way because now you're taking your frustration out on someone else. And there's just a lot of stories that are out there that are huge. There's a lot of people that are going through some really hard things. And just being a beacon and trying to help, you know, within your realm with where you can help within your ability, I think it's always just the most important thing to do, man.
I totally agree with you, man. Yeah, like, man. Especially in the world of Instagram and likes that we live in, like, mm-hmm. You're just seeing people's highlight reels, you know, you're seeing their filtered pictures and you don't know what's going on, man. So, you know, don't assume that you do, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, take what you like, don't what you don't. Yeah, no, I agree, man. And what, dude, there's just so many. Well, we're probably just gonna have to bother you and have you on again down the road, man. Because one, as much as you're tackling one, I'm gonna see you in Idaho here in October. I'll be on your side of the table this time and having some fun with that. But as much as you're accomplishing and as much insight as you have, it would just be a disservice not to have you on, you know, later on and just give to everyone that listens to us, man.
Why don't you guys bring your gear to Idaho? Let's do some podcasts up there.
Yeah, we definitely could. I'll be teach. Cool. I mean, yeah, I don't see why not. I'll still be on 75 hard, by the way, too. I'll be getting my workouts and my gallon of water in a day. I'll still be doing that thing. And we should. Eli, he's going to be in town. His wife is actually coming to Shaw's this time. So he'll be in town at home.
I got some doors to open for her between now. I know she's going to hear some shit about you opening doors in October.
And so I crushed that, bro.
If I don't get a couple of weeks in, I'm in trouble, man.
I crushed that game. I definitely crushed the door. But, you know, I could involve my daughter more with like what I'm doing. And what it's all about. And she's getting to that age where she can probably comprehend and just understand some of that. And it's good as a father to go out there and work and provide, you know, but you don't want to forget that they just see you gone if you're not necessarily shedding some mm-hmm. light on that. And that's definitely a takeaway for me, man, is just maybe, you know, especially in the summers or when she's not in school, just getting her out and involved with some of the stuff that we're doing and try to shed some light on that to allow her some exposure. That helped with your daughters, right? And again, just how fortunate we are to even listen to you and have you on the podcast mm-hmm. where we can selfishly take some gold nuggets for ourselves away that'll help us be better today.
Yeah, remember, memories last, things don't, you know, like don't put your time into buying your kids a bunch of shit that they're not going to remember. And go ask your kids what you got them for your birthday last year. They'll have no idea. Yeah. ask them on your last family vacation. They'll tell you everything. Yeah. So that would be, you know, if you want to know my secrets to being a father, let your kids experience life with you. They'll remember those things forever. If you try and buy their love, they're not going to remember any of that stuff. Like, my kids have no idea what they got for Christmas last year. Like, I'm like, what'd you get? They're like, I don't really remember. But you ask them about like a motorhome we rented 10 years ago. Yeah. Stuck in the snow. Bro, minute by minute, like everything I did wrong, they could tell you to the T.
But cool. It's fun, and it's the experiences that do it, man. And sometimes like I'll buy stuff for kiddos. I know they love me, but it's almost like a token of like, hey, I appreciate you letting me go out and grind for you. And, but still like you still, you know, it's still not a replacement for time. And in addition to just time and love and spent, it's just valuable to your kid to have some perspective and some insight into what you do and how you see this world. Cause the sooner they can grasp some of that, the better are they, you know, the better off they're going to be at making decisions. Cause I'm sure, as you know, junior high, high school, college, you're not going to be around for every decision that they have to make and everything that they have to veer and stay away from. So the better foundation they have within principles and just idealistically how they want to approach their life, the better prepared they are with that, the sooner, the better prepared they are for circumstances or decisions that they have to make, and they still stay the course themselves, you know. And that's something I took away from today. That was huge, man.
Oh, thank you. Well, thanks for having me on, guys, man. This is awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Anytime that you guys have nobody else, you know, and you need to fish at the bottom of the totem pole, man, I'm happy to
Hey,
jump
dude,
in.
you don't gotta invite yourself to these and stick around and wait to be a sideliner, man. You're definitely a headliner for us, and we're excited for the relationship that we have with you and moving forward with some of the cool stuff with Spartan 7. Eli's been working really well on that back end that we talked about. I'm sure you're hearing about some of our meetings we've been having with Dan Cirillo and just moving the needle forward and just organizing some of that. So we're super excited to contribute to that. But more importantly, just share, like, you got to contribute, but then just share the enjoyment and the growth of what it's going to turn into, and just be blessed that we're a part of it and we can share that with you guys.
Yeah, cool, man. Thanks, guys.
Right on.
Derek, super appreciative, man.
Yeah, man. Oh, I need an autograph helmet, by the way. Forgot to ask that. What's up with that, you know?
I went into a card shop once. I'll leave you with this. I went into a card shop once, and I was like, hey, I'm looking for this card. You know, this guy, Derek Price. He's like, who? I was like, he played for Detroit Lions. The guy goes, never heard of him. Maybe that free bucket over there. I go, yeah, it's my buddy.
Oh, dude. Free bucket.
That's what, like, you get who? For fishing, dude. That guy?
That's too
what,
funny.
Why were you looking He's for it? Man. What were you fishing for? That was a signal, man. What were you fishing for?
I was trying to find one of my football cards. You know, I was like, maybe they got it. Walked in like with my wife. I was like, let's go get my card.
Oh,
guy's
man.
Like, who are you? I don't know who that player is. I was like, he's a friend of mine.
Hey, maybe it's in that free bucket over there.
Oh, so funny.
He goes, if it's in that bucket, you can just have it.
I promise you, dude, I'm going to find one of your cards and I'm going to have it. On
I'll
this
bring
podcast,
one to Idaho. I'll bring it up,
dude. There I need it. I need an autograph because I'll be putting it up. I'm gonna We're gonna have it somewhere on this podcast set where people will see it.
Well, we appreciate all you right, guys.
I gotta give you an actual business call, but thank you so
right
much.
Right on. For me. No, what a pleasure, man. Thanks, man. Likewise, man.
Thanks for listening, guys. We will see you next time.
Take care, guys. Yeah.